News World Headquarters in New York. This is NBC Nightly News with Kate Snow.
Good evening. Throughout the entire campaign, he was one of Donald Trump's biggest cheerleaders, the head of the Republican National Committee, Reince Priebus. Late this afternoon, we learned Priebus will run Trump's White House as chief of staff. It's one of two key decisions made today. Hallie Jackson has the latest.
Donald Trump making his first presidential picks for chief of staff, RNC chair Reince Priebus, and as chief strategist, former campaign CEO Steve Bannon.
We are very grateful in Trump world to both Bannon and Priebus, and I think you'll see them continue to work together.
Bannon, considered a flamethrower who helped orchestrate Trump's rise to victory Tuesday, on leave from Breitbart, a news organization often linked to the alt-right. The pick of Priebus already settling nerves inside the Beltway among those who have built relationships with the party head. But simultaneously, concerns now starting to bubble among Trump's base. He's too establishment for the president-elect's West Wing. One campaign source telling NBC News, instead of draining the swamp, we just put in the head alligator. Trump's transition led in part by his children, with new questions about potential conflicts of interest if they take over Trump's business.
Even if he turned it over to an independent trustee and it was the Trump Corporation, there's no perfect way to do this.
And in the business of governing, House Speaker Paul Ryan trying to find common ground.
We are not planning on erecting a deportation force. Donald Trump's not planning on that.
But during his campaign, Trump said he would triple the number of Border Patrol officers. Trump now working on mending fences, making phone calls to former rivals who opposed him, exposing a rift in the party as the nation still grapples with its own divisions. NBC's Steve Patterson in Los Angeles.
So why come out today? What's this about?
Why not? You know, this is all about just making our voices heard.
So far, no sign Trump's letting go of old grudges, tweeting hits against the New York Times today, even as he credits his social media reach with helping propel him to the presidency.
If I use it at all, I'm going to do very restrained. I find it tremendous. It's a modern form of communication. There should be nothing you should be ashamed of. It's where it's at.
So, Hallie, Reince Priebus, Steve Bannon, both powerful figures in Trump's world. How do they divide up responsibilities now?
Well, apparently, as equal partners, Kate, according to the transition team, both men have earned the loyalty of the president-elect over this campaign, and that is a quality that is important to him. But both, remember, represent very different parts of the party. Bannon, more the base. Priebus, more the Beltway. You're already seeing members of Congress congratulating the RNC head on his new position, including, by the way, House Speaker Paul Ryan, who's been a longtime friend of Priebus's. And that relationship, Kate, could help the president-elect, Donald Trump, push his legislative agenda early on.
Hallie Jackson in Washington. Hallie, thanks as usual. President-elect Trump promised to make a lot of changes if elected. His pledge to undo many of President Obama's executive actions could have an immediate impact on legal protections for transgender Americans. And as our justice correspondent Pete Williams explains, Trump's election has a lot of people in the LGBT community worried about what happens next.
Zoe Gould and Madison Grabois of Philadelphia talked about getting married someday.
Cheers to you.
But rushed to get it done this weekend after Donald Trump's election.
I really wanted us to feel like we could get married under an administration that made us feel very comfortable and really welcome in America.
One of Trump's first acts in office will be nominating a replacement for Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia.
Replacing a conservative with a conservative would not change the court's makeup, so gay marriage would not be in trouble unless any of the liberal justices retire and Trump gets to name their replacements.
But Trump could derail the current push for transgender rights. The Supreme Court will soon hear the case of Gavin Grimm, a Virginia high school senior born female who identifies as male. He wants the school to let him use the bathroom that matches his gender identity.
I did not set out to make waves. I set out to use the bathroom.
The lower courts ruled for him, saying that transgender students are covered under a law called Title IX that forbids sex discrimination in public schools. The rulings were based on a Department of Education memo that said gender identity is the same as sex. The transgender community fears that Trump's education department may declare that reading of the law invalid.
If, as you would expect, the Trump administration reverses course, their argument kind of falls apart, and so you wouldn't expect anything like a win at the Supreme Court.
Trump's own statements about gay and transgender rights are mixed.
I know many, many gay people, tremendous people, and to be honest with you, it's as far as civil unions are concerned, I haven't totally formed my opinion, but there can be no discrimination against gays.
But Vice President-elect Mike Pence opposed gay marriage on religious grounds and has taken a much tougher line. There's little doubt the quick movement toward transgender rights is about to slow down. Pete Williams, NBC News, Washington.
Overseas, at least two people are dead tonight after a powerful earthquake struck New Zealand. Lucy Cavanaugh has the latest.
This is what a 7.8 earthquake looks, feels, and sounds like.
It's a big one, too.
Amateur video capturing the terrifying tremors striking just after midnight. In Christchurch, near the epicenter, tsunami sirens sent residents fleeing to higher ground. The quake was powerful enough to split roads, crack bridges. Stunned residents evacuated as far away as New Zealand's capital, 150 miles north, including Brendan Perez, a California native.
Were you worried for your life?
I've experienced earthquakes before, but once it started getting to the point where the entire room was shaking, things were falling down, then I started to get a little worried.
5 years ago, a magnitude 6.3 quake devastated Christchurch. 185 people died in what's remembered as New Zealand's darkest day. Fatalities appearing low so far, the full scale of the damage still unclear. Lucy Kafanov, NBC News, London.
Back in this country now, wildfires across the southeast have millions of Americans on high alert. More than 40 big fires are burning in seven states. Some of the largest ones are in Georgia and North Carolina, where some residents have been forced to evacuate in recent days. Around the region, extreme drought conditions feeding the fires. Several states have issued air quality alerts. Now to an NBC News exclusive. To prevent another attack, terror attack here in the U.S., America's largest police force, the NYPD, has sent its own officers all around the world. The program took on even more importance after the terror attacks in Paris exactly 1 year ago today. Jonathan Dienst of our New York station WNBC gives us a first look inside this normally secret operation.
Gunfire in Antwerp, Belgium.
This is a second shooting of at least 8 people.
A mass shooting at a synagogue. As terrorists strike at 3 locations across the city. Inside police headquarters, officials coordinate the response. Along with Belgian counterterror teams, New York City police detectives respond.
Multiple casualties, unknown if it's a hostage situation.
Reporting back to New York in real time. While in New York, SWAT units deploy to Grand Central Terminal and synagogues as a precaution. But for New York and Antwerp, this is just a drill. All part of a little-known NYPD counterterror program that puts detectives across the globe to try to stop the next attack.
We need to be positioned 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, all around the globe to react right in New York City in real time.
John Miller is Deputy Commissioner of Intelligence for the NYPD and says fighters returning to Europe from Syria are a growing threat to the U.S. too.
They've come back trained, hardened, committed fighters. Where are they now? Is there a plot or a plan?
The NYPD now has detectives in 13 locations, including Europe, the Middle East, even Australia.
Here in London, NYPD detectives stationed across the globe are meeting with Scotland Yard and other foreign authorities, sharing intelligence about terror networks and the latest threats to Europe and the U.S.
The French-speaking shooter is one of the attackers who ends up in the Bataclan theater.
As the Paris attacks unfolded 1 year ago today, an NYPD detective was on the scene.
I was just reaching out to all my contacts that I'd made over the years to get that information and relay it back to New York as soon as possible.
With that information and the fact that French police at times were outgunned in an earlier attack, the NYPD added counterterror training for hundreds of its officers.
We're not trying to investigate these incidents. We're trying to find out that connection to New York City. That's a really, really important factor. And in some of these attacks, there's been connections to New York City.
Including possible connections the Paris attackers had in New York.
Can you say this program with officers overseas has saved lives?
Can I point to a specific life that it saved on a certain day? No, I can't.
But New York, he says, has faced 20 plots since 9/11.
Look, we're a global target facing targeting from a global problem, terrorism. And to understand that enough to do something about it, we need to have a global perspective.
With resources over there to try to stop the next attack
here. Jonathan Dienst, NBC News, London.
We turn to breaking health news now, and for 50 million Americans who suffer from chronic pain, finding relief with the right drug is crucial. Tonight, new research just released today at the annual meeting of the American Heart Association is both calming fears and raising questions for people who take some of the most popular pain relievers. Dr. John Torres has the details.
Go, 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 go.
For Kristen Urbacher, every step is a reminder of how much pain she used to be in.
My ankles would swell to the point that I could barely walk, and that was on a daily basis.
Rheumatoid arthritis left the 44-year-old suffering. The only drug that gave her relief, Celebrex, a popular but controversial pain reliever, feared to be linked to heart attacks. 10 years ago, its sister drug, Vioxx, was pulled from the market because of its link to thousands of deaths.
It was a concern that I would start taking the drug and develop cardiovascular issues.
But now, a long-awaited 10-year study of 24,000 patients that compared Celebrex to two popular pain relievers, ibuprofen and naproxen. Good news for patients. Celebrex at moderate doses does not put them at higher risk of heart disease.
This is reassuring that they're not going to have to trade off an increased risk of heart attack for the slightly better safety of these drugs.
Study author Dr. Steven Nissen says another striking finding had to do with ibuprofen. Compared to Celebrex, patients taking a prescription-strength dose had a 64% higher risk for kidney complications and a 54% increase for stomach bleeding.
Is it safe to say that for at least chronic use, the safest of these three medications is Celebrex?
Moderate doses of Celebrex appear to be at least as safe and probably safer than the older drugs, ibuprofen and naproxen.
Reassurance for patients like Kristen, who can now take a crucial drug without the fear.
I'm very fortunate in that, and I'm able to continue the treatment with it. It's been uneventful for me. It's helped with the pain.
Giving more than just pain relief for the millions of Americans suffering from chronic pain.
And Dr. Torres is with us now. Most of us know these medicines because we take the over-the-counter form of them. They're in our medicine cabinet. What does this study tell us?
You know, for those of us who take it occasionally for the headache, the backache, the other types of aches and pains, these medicines, naproxen, ibuprofen, Celebrex, have all been shown to be fairly safe. For those who take it on a daily basis at higher prescription strength doses, the message there, and for any of us taking any medication, is to take the lowest effective dose for the shortest time possible to minimize any side effects, Kate.
All right, Dr. Torres, thanks so much. This month, the country's first offshore wind farm is scheduled to start generating electricity in the waters off of Rhode Island. While the concept is popular in Europe, it's been controversial here and still is. Previous attempts to build wind farms off the East Coast have been stalled. We get more on this historic step from our chief environmental affairs correspondent, Ann Thompson.
Block Island, Rhode Island, home to the tiniest town in the smallest state, ready to make a big impact on America's energy future.
The wind is spectacular off our coast. It's world class.
Deepwater Wind CEO Jeff Grabowski proudly guides us around the nation's first offshore wind farm, 3 miles from Block Island. Five turbines standing twice the height of the Statue of Liberty that will send electricity to the island and the mainland without producing the emissions that fuel climate change.
We need to make investments in new projects like this in order to tap into what will be our future as a clean energy nation.
What if this project fails?
It's not going to fail, Anne. It's here. It's beautiful. It's spectacular.
Spin that depends on your point of view. The farms changed the seascape Rosemary Ives' families enjoyed for 70 years, during the day and night.
We have flashing red lights, white lights, and sometimes green lights, so it looks like a landing strip at JFK.
Judy Gray loves the view from her deck. It means the island will finally stop using dirty diesel power that generates some of the highest bills in the nation.
I paid 52 cents per kilowatt hour, was it, in August? 52 cents. There's nowhere to go but down.
As Block Island moves away from diesel, Deepwater Wind says its electric bills could drop. But those on the mainland who rely on National Grid, the company buying the wind farm's power, their electricity costs could go up.
I hate to use the term rigged, but that's how one would describe the public process on Deepwater Wind.
Deepwater Wind insists this is the most vetted energy project in the Northeast. Above the water, the turbines will generate enough power for 17,000 homes. And underneath serve as artificial reefs attracting fish, helping charter fisherman Hank Hewitt's business.
We've actually booked trips where the people are saying we want to go fish the turbines.
The site of an energy revolution off our shores. Ann Thompson, NBC News, Block Island.
It was 1 year ago tonight we first got the reports of an explosion near a stadium in Paris, a series of terrorist attacks, as it turned out, that killed 130 people in all. And one of the most poignant stories we heard at the time was from a man who lost his wife in the Bataclan Theater. He wrote a message to the terrorists that went viral. Tonight, Kelly Kobiea follows up on his story 1 year later.
November 13, 2015, a night of terror. Three men armed with rifles and explosives killed 89 people in the Bataclan Theater. Helene Moyal-Laris was one of them. Her 17-month-old son, Melville, home with husband Antoine Laris.
Shadows were everywhere in my life, and sometimes I felt so alone.
In that darkness, Laris wrote an open letter to the terrorists who killed his wife. "You stole the life of an exceptional human being, the love of my life," he wrote, "the mother of my son, but you will not have my hate." It went viral on Facebook. It's still up today, a symbol of hope and defiance.
Do you ever regret having written it?
Every day, yeah.
In his book, You Will Not Have My Hate, Laris confesses he sometimes doubts he can live up to his words, and he grieves.
People ask me if I have forgotten or forgiven. I forgive nothing. I forget nothing. Not looking at me right now.
His story about how he resisted hate, even in heartbreak, has inspired thousands. The letters, gifts, and words of support still coming in today.
When you open that door, people just want to open to you. You don't feel alone after that.
A year ago, Laris made this vow. "We are just two, my son and me, but we are stronger than all the armies in the world. For his whole life, this little boy will threaten you by being happy and free." Today, they're living out that promise.
We have fun together. We go to parks. Normal life.
The Bataclan Theater is closed tonight out of respect to those who died and to those like Antoine Laris and his son, bravely living on. Kelly Kobiea, NBC News, London.
Finally tonight, one of the most important things for kids in school is to feel like they're part of the class. But when illness or other circumstances make it hard to get to school, what do kids and parents do? Bring in a robot, of course. From Florida, Sarah Dolloff explains.
Good morning, boys and girls.
Good morning, Miss Cash.
There's a morning routine inside Miss Cash's third grade classroom. The Pledge of Allegiance, announcements.
It's a great day at Pelican Elementary.
And a robot called Vigo, one of a handful working in schools across the country.
Good morning, Abby.
Once it's on, everyone is in place and ready to learn.
Was that addition or multiplication?
Multiplication.
I see thumbs up everywhere, Abby.
8-year-old Abby Newberry's allergies became so severe, it's no longer safe to be in school. But behind Vigo's controls, she can change classes, participate in group projects,
what did you want to write?
Even do interviews, all from her dining room table.
Abby, what's your favorite subject in school?
Math, science, and science.
Do you see her excel in those subjects?
She excels at everything.
Before Vigo, she started falling behind in more ways than one.
She was crying all the time. She was constantly upset. She was depressed. She sheltered herself in her room.
I didn't have any friends. I didn't do anything.
Abby was chosen as one of her Florida school district's first robot test cases.
Well, hello, Mr. Carter.
Hey, Miss Cass. She tells me how well you're doing.
Principal Ed Carter sees a bright future for the program and Abby.
So in theory, we could see her cross the stage at graduation one day
via
Vigo.
And I can't wait to be there to see that happen.
Today, the district has six robots used by students with chronic illness, cancer, even anxiety.
So we've actually flipped the classroom, so to speak. You know, instead of taking the services to the kid, we're bringing the kid back to the classroom.
Two times.
Her family says it's brought Abby back, too.
It's nice to see the confidence back.
Do you like the color? Yes.
A virtual door back to the classroom and the social life she loves. Sarah Dolloff, NBC News, Cape Coral, Florida.
What a cool idea. That is NBC Nightly News for this Sunday. Up next, football night in America, the Seattle Seahawks taking on the New England Patriots. Lester Holt will be back here tomorrow. I'm Kate Snow reporting from New York. I'll see you tomorrow at 3 Eastern on MSNBC. For all of us here at NBC News, have a great night.